That sitting was nice. I don't always take advantage of the fact that at the Zen Center we have an evening sitting at 5:40, and a lot of people come in after work and go sit, and I'm so busy working at the Zen Center that I don't take time at the end of the day to sit so often, so it feels great. Thanks for that opportunity. And gave me a chance to make a little bit of a transition from my busy day. Maybe you've made a transition from yours. I said that the subject matter of what I was going to talk about tonight is greed. And I've been studying greed specifically over the past maybe 8 or 9 months. You know how we like to divide the world up into little sections so that we can figure out what one we're in. So in Buddhism, there's of course greed, hate, and delusion. And one could consider oneself a hate type or a delusion type or a greed type. And it was quite clear to me that I'm a greed type. So for a while I actually studied hate with a teacher at Zen Center who's been really focusing on this for a long time, and she uses a book called by Shantideva, which has a chapter in it on patience, which is an antidote to hate. And I wanted to study it because I'm actually not that familiar with that part of my being. It's not a normal kind of default position. Where when some stress arises or there's some pain, that I'll go to anger to pull away from it. That's not my usual thing. So I wanted to get more familiar with something that I wasn't so familiar with. However, that doesn't mean that I know a lot about greed. It's just familiar to me. And I know enough to know that that is a way that I work with my human life. And you may have heard Buddhism described as swimming upstream. So all the practices that I've been exposed to and that you've been exposed to are ways to work with our human life and undo some of the habit mind and some of the knots that we've tied really tight from the way that we've survived as humans. So I thought by being more aware of my greed that I might be able to catch it a little sooner. I brought some notes with me that I'd like to refer to for a little bit, and maybe more than a little bit, but a while, and then I'd like to open it up to discussion. I think this is probably a topic everyone has something to say about. So, this book, Hooked, I have found very useful. It's a compilation of essays by different Buddhist teachers of all different traditions, and edited by Stephanie Kaza, who happens to be a Zen student. And she teaches at University of Vermont, and this is the subtitle is Buddhist Writings on Greed, Desire, and the Urge to Consume. So it takes this study of greed into the whole field of the consumer mentality and ecology, and a lot of useful information. I'm not going to enter into that specifically tonight, but if you are interested in how the greed that is in our nature is affecting everything and everyone, then there's a lot of good teachings in here about paying more attention to our consumer context, the way in which we are encouraged all the time to consume. And she actually talks about it as a belief system that has replaced some of our spiritual systems, our spiritual support systems, so that consumerism has become a religion. I think it's an interesting way to look at it. When I decided to teach the class that I'm currently teaching on greed, I think it's good to start with a definition, usually, when you're doing something like this. So, of course, I Googled greed, and I came up with some definitions. So I'd like to just read them to you to give you a sense of what I'm aiming at. So the first definition that came up was, it's a dictionary definition. Greed is a desire to obtain more money or material possessions or bodily satisfaction than one is considered to need. So it's an interesting study between need and greed. And I think, I don't know how many of you, you know, have actually gone hungry. I would propose that it wouldn't be a very high percentage of the people in this room. But I could be wrong. But that kind of experience, we're very sheltered from that in this society, and for the most part. And so to tell the difference between need and greed is not something we're so good at. But that is a basic definition of greed. It's more than we need. More than we need. And antonyms. This was also part of the dictionary discovery, is the antonyms, the opposites of greed, are benevolence, which means that greed has a sense of maybe there is some anger in there. You know, maybe there is a little bit of out of my way, I want it kind of feeling, for benevolence to be an antonym for it. And generosity is very much an antonym. And in the class that I'm working on, we're looking at how greed can transform into giving. What's that relationship between holding and giving? And the last antonym is temperance. So there's something about what Buddha talked about as the middle way. Temperance, the middle way. And I want to be careful when I start to talk about this. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have things, that we shouldn't buy things, that we shouldn't occasionally grab a little comfort, even though it never lasts as long as we think it's going to last. But this isn't about guilt. It isn't about looking at calling ourselves bad. This is about just our human life. Greed is part of our human life. So, and then Wikipedia, for however valid that is, had some interesting ways to look at greed. It says, greed is called a selfish desire to obtain money, wealth, or other material possessions or entity more than one legitimately needs. So that adds in the idea of selfishness. Maybe that's where that sense of, holding, that kind of, that negative kind of, it's for me, it's for me, it's for me. And again, going back to what one needs. And then it talks about the seven deadly sins. So in Catholicism, greed is one of the deadly sins, and avarice is another way of talking about greed, avarice. And desiring things simply for the purpose of having them. Does that ring a bell with anyone? Have you ever wanted something? Not even that was more than you need, but that you didn't need at all. Just you wanted it. You wanted it. But it emphasizes a little bit later in that same definition, at the expense of another person's welfare. So in a minute when I'm going to talk about some of the ways we can work with this, and one of them is the precepts. How to notice how our actions affect other people, and to, depending on our commitment to those precepts, we'll be supported more or less in our struggle with greed. the selfishness, the nature of, you know, I want this for me. If we notice that by wanting it for me, it robs someone else of something, that can be a helpful way to work with greed. In Wikipedia, it talked about what Buddhists believe greed is, which I thought was interesting. It says it's based on incorrectly connecting material wealth with happiness. So it takes a little bit of a turn there, that we think that something is actually going to make us happy. And we're all interested in that, clearly. But placing that power into a material object. And then, of course, because we put the power in there, we want to grab it. And it says this is caused by a view that exaggerates the positive aspects of an object. We give it existence. We say it is something, and therefore it could have a quality of satisfaction in it, in the object. So working with this, first of all, I guess, is to admit or to be interested in this as like a problem. Is this a problem in our life? This grabbing things, this leaning into things, this kind of selfish, I want, knee-jerk reaction that keeps us from thinking about the effect that that action might have on the rest of the world. Is it important? I found that I really want to study this, and so I don't know where that's coming from in my life. I don't know all the things that are supporting that, other than, well, yes, I do. Someone brought it to my attention. Not directly, but someone introduced me to that book, Hooked. And in there is the beginning of information about such things as buying coffee. And the minute I heard about, I knew a little bit about coffee and a little bit about fair trade coffee and a little bit about paying attention to, you know, where it comes from. But it hadn't actually entered into my grid of how I make decisions. So someone introduced the information to me, and I remember I read about it, and I read some more about it, and they handed out pamphlets, and I read more about it. Almost a little bit unwilling, you know, I was a little bit, I thought, oh no, now I know about this. You know, there was a little bit of a feeling, and I think which had kept me up to this point only knowing as much as I knew. Because I suspected it might mean that I might have to do without something I wanted. So I remember going to Pete's, and being in line and looking up the list and trying to decide if I was going to buy, you know, Sulawesi Kolosi or, you know, Major Dickinson's, things that I had been used to buying, you know, since I've been going to Pete's for 30 years, no, a long time. And so I'm looking at the list, but something made me look up higher on the list. And sure enough, there was fair trade coffee on this list. I don't know how long it had been there. It could have been there a year. It could have been there a month. I don't know. But I saw it. And I thought, that's all I can buy. I can only buy that anymore. You know, I can't give into my preference of, I'd like something a little more rich, please. You know, I'd like the taste of chocolate, you know, with my coffee. No, I can't do that anymore. It means I have to go out of my way, you know? So this commitment through the information, through having it brought to my attention, at the right time, I was ripe to hear it and see it. It has made my life a little bit more difficult, but I feel a little bit more lined up with how I want to be lined up. So, you know, I am a little bit careful about what kind of information I take in. And I was really pleased that at the end of An Inconvenient Truth, when I did go to see that, you know, maybe 8 or 9 months ago, that at the end of all that information, all that painful awareness being, you know, being exposed to the, what's going on in the planet, that there was a list of things that I could pay attention to. And there were a couple things that I could do pretty easily. You know, the kind of light bulbs you use. Well, I can do that. Now, I put one of those in my bedroom next to my bed, and it buzzes. But it's there, you know. I'm not taking it out, you know. I can handle the buzz. It's a little irritating, but I forget about it. And if I'm reading, it goes away. And maybe, you know, there's a non-buzzing one out there that I could find someday. But, you know, that it seemed like, okay, I don't have a choice now about light bulbs because this is something I can do. And there was another one about taking more public transportation. And since I live in the city now, it's something that I can do. So these are some of the causes and conditions that have brought me, the interest in studying this, quite up for me. And I think it's pretty important for it to be pretty alive, because these are difficult studies. When we really get into and get intimate with ourselves around our intentions. So what can our Buddhist studies do to help us in this? Once the desire has arisen to study this, if it's strong enough, we look around for what can support this study, and raising the awareness is one. Precepts is another. And I think the third can be looked at in terms of sangha or support. But also, if you want to go more deeply into that, there are it's the study of emptiness, which is maybe the three characteristics of phenomena, which are impermanence, dissatisfaction, and emptiness. So we have teachings. Buddhism gives us teachings to study that really help with understanding how to untie the knots of greed. Now, greed in this context of Buddhism is another way of saying clinging, right? Attachment, clinging. Attachment, I think clinging is a step beyond attachment. So clinging is holding it tight. Attachment is touching it and not wanting to let go. And then grabbing it, using it as a weapon against ourselves and others. That's the greed part. That's the holding on, the clinging. So there are many teachings about that that can help us. So to look at first raising the awareness. I'm gonna study something in front of you right now of my own, with my own greed, and you can sort of play with me by watching and listening to what I'm going to expose about what's going on with me. But also, you might want to think about something, and it's easier to use a material object in your life that you have a moderate attachment to. And so to see if that helps you through this process a little bit. So a couple times now I've done talks on greed. And the time before, the first time I did, I brought a couple of objects that I had looked at in my life and that I felt a moderate attachment to. And I wanted to see what that attachment was all about, and to actually see if I could let go of these things. So once upon a time I had three gray cashmere sweaters. And one of them I lost on retreat. I left it at the retreat place. So that was gone. And that left me with two. So at the as a backstory, you know, part of the process of being a Zen priest, when, at least at Zen Center with my teacher, when we ordain, there's a recommendation for the maybe next 4 or 5 years to not actually wear a lot of colors, to just stay in the realm of gray and black and like that. Monochromatic, subtle colors. Notice what I have on tonight. It's been 8 years. But what that does is it there's a lot of, you know, interesting repercussions from that. But one is that all of the attachment that you would have to colors goes into gray, you know. Shades of gray. How many shades of gray can, you know, like today I feel like wearing a lighter shade of gray, or, you know. So it helps, but it doesn't erase all forms of this insanity. At the talk I gave away the second gray sweater. And at that time I was looking at the quality of the sweater. You know, I have a few cashmere sweaters, which are really very practical when you're in a monastic setting. You know, it's warm and it's not too heavy and et cetera. But it's cashmere. And there are other things that go along with that are, you know, there's a kind of an arrogance to it, a class issue with it. And the idea that softness is going to make my life better. It's going to give me pleasure. You know, when I have it on, I'm only going to have pleasure. That delusion that we have, that something that we want that has a quality that we think is pleasurable is going to change our life permanently. The energy that we put into getting those things shows that we think it's actually going to change our life permanently. Because if we really, really knew, you know, admitted how short of a period of time it's going to give us that pleasure, we could never justify the amount of energy we put into garnering these things. So anyway, the softness, and I noticed that I had a whole story about how softness was going to make my life so much better, so much better. And then the other night in my class, we were talking, people brought things, and it became clear that one other thing that I hadn't really worked with was the idea of not being able to replace something. So giving something away when you can actually replace it, if you put in, I had noticed myself looking through catalogs at gray sweaters that had the kind of a neck that the other one had so that I could maybe replace it. But then I think, well, maybe I shouldn't replace it exactly. But I'm looking in the catalogs. I'm watching myself do this. So the other day I put this one on and it looked really nice under this particular gray jacket that I have. I really like the way the collar, it has a nice little collar, you know. And it fits kind of snugly, so it's not a loose one. And as I was looking at myself in the mirror, and I thought, oh, I don't want to bring that. I don't want to give this away. So the ante is up a little bit more on this sweater than it was on the other sweater. And I think it has to do with that this particular one, the other sweater, every year at Macy's, at the end of the year, they have a sale of cashmere sweaters for $99, $69 if you wait really a long time, that have a particular kind of collar. So I knew, somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew I could replace that other sweater, right? But this one I got on sale, and this was like something that I think was only created once. And it's not going to be in, you know, this under this person's signature again. So if I give this away, which I'm going to do, I have to be careful. I have to be careful. And as I was sitting doing zazen, I was looking at, you know, will I grieve when I give this away? Will I grieve? Because if there's too much grief, you know, maybe I'm not ready. You know, maybe it'll kick back. Maybe I'll, you know, run out and, you know, the first sweater who knows what I would do, you know, if I'm not ready. Because what this is really, this is a study in a way of renunciation. And when we get ordained, one of the parts of the ceremony is the night before you shave your head down, except for a couple of really small little spots that in the ceremony, the teacher then comes by with a razor and shaves off those last couple of spots. And it's amazing what that does to your being, you know, in public too. And all ceremonies have, with that public element, make it, it's a stamp on your psyche, what happens when that happens. But renunciation has to be something, I think, where it falls away, where something falls away from you. That's renunciation. Pushing it away, it's too much. It's too much. And I think it kicks back. I think there are repercussions from that kind of letting go. So as I was sitting here doing zazen, I was thinking, okay, is it too much? Can I give it away? And then the teachings came up. Not only that, I was standing in the corner. This is how we teach each other. Standing in the corner right before everyone came, there's a book over there that says these are free, and I opened one up, and there was a statement in there about possessions, or actually about losing something. Someone loses their reputation. And the saying by the teacher at the bottom was something like, it's gone. And not only that, it served its purpose completely when it was there. It totally exhausted itself while it was there. Because it's not in the thing. Didn't say that there, but it's not in the thing. So in when that teaching arose, something in me went, oh, you know, the experience of, would you like this?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Of giving it away and studying, you know, being committed actually to studying the attachment. Yeah, it goes good with your coloring, nice with your hair. Mm-hmm. It's an ongoing, you know, I have a relationship with that sweater still. That sweater isn't gone, that sweater is teaching me. And I have a relationship with you now and all of you around it, and it's complete. It's already taught me, it's already served what it needed to serve, which was maybe like this, who knows? Can't know all the things that it has done. It's too, you know, all the causes and conditions are unknowable, but you can pinpoint a few and build on them and study them. So that was one thing I wanted to do. The other thing is this. And this is harder. And I think one of the things we do besides try to ameliorate our suffering with things, either because we think they're gonna be soft and pleasurable, or we think it's an ice cream cone, it's sweet, or you know, however we try to ameliorate, or it's, you know, a sexual experience. Whatever we're going after to ameliorate our pain, that we can study that. There are other ways that we relate to material world, and that is we anthropomorphize things. We give them, we make this representative of a person that gave it to us so that they live in it, you know, they live in the thing. Or a place that we went is inside this thing. So I'm just going to check the time. How are we doing? Okay, good. Ooh. Okay, this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then I want to hear from you. So so I got this in China when I was visiting the temple where Dogen was enlightened, and I bought this. And it goes really nice with my red sweater. And it fits me really well. It wraps around just the right number of times so I can kind of use it like that. But as I was sitting here doing zazen, thinking, can I really, you know, can I? I wore it, and I was thinking about giving it away, so I was willing to at least wear it and consider. And then I realized, you know, the arrogance of me saying, because I know I've said to people, I said, where'd you get that? I said, well, I got it when I was in China. And that doesn't serve me or anybody else. For me to be encouraged, to have the opportunity to say that, to kind of build myself up in that way, that doesn't help me. And this is Dogen's not here. This is not Dogen. This is not, you know, even the temple in China where I got it. So would you like this? So I learned tonight sitting here how the teachings help. That teaching of, you know, it's not Dogen and it's not who I want to be. I don't want to be a person who is bragging about going to China on my mala. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's so silly. It's so human. You know? So it's almost 10 to 9, and I'd like to hear responses, you know, questions, if any of you have been thinking about some of the things that are like this in your life that you want to bring forward, or anything you'd like to ask. I am interested. Yeah.
Are you sure you're allowed to wear any color?
No. Am I allowed to wear any color? I have a relationship with my teacher that in which I would discuss with him if I was going to do something that I thought was unusual. Okay. So to go to a priest meeting, I probably wouldn't wear this at a priest meeting, but I also wanted to be more relaxed coming here, and I didn't know, you know, there was a lot of reasons, I think, why I wore this. It matched my mala.
There's a reason for my asking. Uh-huh.
Oh, thank you. Wow, that's beautiful. That's really lovely. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The colors look nice with your complexion.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I am so humbled by your humility. I think you're just fabulous. I mean, I think you're a great teacher to put your thoughts into action like this. As you were sitting here talking, I was thinking, oh, I love gray sweaters. Maybe she'll give it to me. So I would like to give you this gray sweater. I love this gray sweater. It keeps me very warm. It's washable. But I'm going to wear it until the end of the class because I get cold, but I'm going to give it to you at the end of the class. But I also, you might want to wash it though. I wore it to work today. As you were talking about greed, and I was thinking about, you know, like, I have a husband whom I think is really greedy. I mean, he'll go and he will never buy one of anything. He'll buy like three or four, two, you know, but never one. And I'm always really put off by that because it's more than he needs. It's more than I need. Once we have it, I can see that there's actually a use for having more than one, that we can find a use for it. But when I look at why I really don't want more than one, it goes back to my fear that if I get too much of this thing, I won't have enough for something else. And I was wondering if you could say something about that. It looks like not greed, but it kind of is.
It's fear. It's just the other side, you know. We either want to lean in. I'm a leaner. You know, I lean into the future. I lean into grasping. Other people are in the past, and they're avoiding, and they're pulling away. It's the same thing. It's the degree. So, you know, if you're afraid of getting attached, then you're attached to being afraid. So it's where you're stuck. It's just where you're stuck. And there are different practices that help different inclinations. You know, if you lean this way or you lean that. One of the great things I learned at Tassajara, being there for a while, is I wasn't rushing headlong into the future. You know, you actually, there's nowhere to go except to the baths, you know. And so and you just walk, you learn to walk quite slowly and not leaning so much. And that actually lasts for a while after you come back. So that's how I learned how I lean. So you learn your proclivities and you then find the antidotes. There might be a different antidote to fear. You know, you might need to have 3 ice cream cones first to find out that it doesn't work. Yes.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for your presence. You remind me of my grandmother, mm-hmm. who was a very wise woman. I thought she was a Franciscan by devotions. And in this moment, I just recognized a couple of things. And one was the law of attraction or the law of nature, which is an energy. It transcends, it's like if you give something away, it comes back to you, and that attraction I noticed just happened right now, and I like the middle path, where you don't give away everything, but you don't take everything either, and that balance of knowing. That life is to be enjoyed in its many aspects, but also that clinging, where you attain something, and whether it owns you or you own it, has really been important to me from early childhood. Mm-hmm. 'Cause my grandmother was a Franciscan, and one of the things I learned was that material things are good, but they're not everything. And and the one thing I wanted to say here is that that presence of knowing the difference between the two, of it not owning you and you owning it, and still being able to get pleasure from it, but being able to let go of it and witness that in the present moment, that in letting go, it comes back. So it's a constant process of surrender, letting go, surrender, letting go, and then at the same time, holding on. You know, it's like in, through, and in out, and then over and over again.
I think that could very well be true, and any wish in giving away that it'll come back doesn't count. You know, I mean, it's sort of like discovering that it was harder to give away something that wasn't replaceable. You know, one of the things that made it easier for me to give away is that I thought I could make it come back myself even. So that is a danger point. It's a much longer discussion to get into the concept of pleasure, but I would just propose that it's quite possible that there actually is no pleasure. That pleasure is one of the idea that there is pleasure is an inverted view. It's one of the four inverted views that Buddha talks about. So when you study really close, you see that what you think is going to be there isn't. And there's even this wonderful term called sukha-dukkha, which is the pain of pleasure. The moment you get something pleasurable, an anxiety arises that it's going to go away. So if you're that intimate with your pleasure, you will see. And it happens in long retreats. It's quite, you can really study this. You start to feel really comfortable, and almost instantaneously is the anxiety. How long is this going to last? Or, you know, I want more. It's not quite enough. It's not quite, you know, pleasurable enough. So that You know, that is when you say human nature, you know, when you say it's the law of attraction, these are the kind of laws that we're swimming upstream against. You know, to get to the bottom of what is true happiness. True happiness doesn't necessarily, is not the same thing as pleasure. So this, we don't have time to really empty that up. I mean, open that up and look at the emptiness of it, but I would just propose that as a something to look at. So when we only have a couple more minutes, I don't know if there's one more question. There was a hand over here. That you have the mic, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say first I really liked hearing about the difference between relinquishing something and actually pushing it away and that being not the right timing, because I think timing is so important. And the second thing I appreciate hearing is the meaning that we attach to whatever object. And for me, it takes a different form, which is there's this biking, this exercise class, that I have been really looking at why I'm so attached to it. And over time, I've realized that, to me, that represents my health, mm-hmm. right. literally my health. Like, if I attend this class, mm-hmm. I will be healthy for, ever. You know, ever. Yeah. And so I mm-hmm. really think that's important to see what it is that that item represents.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Well, I think you probably want to go beyond 9, so we probably should. I know there's a couple more questions, but we should probably stop now, right? Yes? Okay, thank you very much.